I'm going to ask you to imagine with me a story of a boy, a young farm boy. And I can relate to this boy, for he's the youngest. I'm the youngest also in the family. Is anyone else here the youngest? Okay, several of you can probably relate. And this may not be his experience, but my experience is when you were the youngest, several things became your lot. If there was anything fun or glamorous or exciting to do, you didn't get to do it. The older brothers got to do it. If you tried to usurp what they saw as their right to that, you would get thoroughly pounded. Often when things went wrong, whether you did it or not, you would also get the blame. And one of the most obvious things about being the youngest was if there was any undesirable work to do, you got it. And so this young man was in that position. He was a farm boy. He had several older brothers, which had the glamorous jobs, got the glory. And this young man had the scut job. In his case, that was herding the sheep. And so we're with this young man out in the hills, and he's watching a flock of sheep, which is not a glorious job, seldom an exciting job. Most of the time, it's dull, repetitious, and boring. And in this particular day, he's twiddling his thumbs and wasting time and watching the sheep, because he's supposed to watch the sheep, you see. And he sees one of his brothers come over the hill. And his brother goes, "Hey, you, come on." He's like, "What's... Come on, Dad wants to see you right now." Well, if you're anything like me, the first thing that goes through your mind is, "Oh no, what did I do now?" It's not good to be summoned. So he follows, and of course his brother outpaces him, and he's trying to keep up, and he's running, skipping, and hopping, trying to keep up. And of course his brother gets back to the farm long before he does, and he comes into the yard expecting to be chewed out and is amazed at what he sees. In the farmyard, there is a gathering. In the midst of the gathering is the great prophet Samuel, who looks at him and says, "You, this is the one." He proceeds to anoint young David as the future king of Israel. Imagine what's running through his mind. We don't know. And so what does he do next? We're told he goes back to the sheep because God has lessons for him to learn before he's able to lead the nation of Israel. We're also told that when he returns to the sheep, he sits down and he writes a poem. And the words he writes are these: "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death." Oh, I missed a verse. "He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever." The Lord calls David a man after his own heart. You can see why when you consider that this is a young boy writing these words. He knows God's heart. I've often wondered why in the scriptures the Lord is often pictured as a shepherd. Why that particular picture? I mean, there's other pictures, but this is very common. And I started thinking about it and pondering. Now, my insight will be probably different than some of yours, because I went to college at the University of Minnesota, the Ag School in St. Paul. And as an undergraduate in journalism and animal science, I got a job working for the animal science department as a shepherd. And this was my first experience with sheep. And probably like most of you, I had a preconceived notion that sheep are smelly, stupid. You know the picture, I'm sure. And I discovered I was wrong on most counts. Sheep are very different than what I had expected. And if you look at sheep as sheep, not as what you think they are, but as what God created them to be, you recognize we have much in common with sheep. And perhaps this is why the Lord is pictured as our shepherd. There's a very unique relationship between a shepherd and his sheep, as opposed to just any person and their sheep. And I think the most important thing to realize before we get into this is that sheep have one primary method of self-defense: invisibility. Which is why if you're herding sheep, a flock of 10,000 is much easier to move than two or three, because their only safety is being the guy in the middle so the predator picks off somebody else. And if there's only two or three of you, it's hard to be in the middle. So sheep panic and do stupid things, which is where the reputation is derived. We can derive benefits when we acknowledge the Lord as our shepherd, and we will receive the blessings listed in the 23rd Psalm. There are four main blessings that I'd like to describe. And the first one is abundant provision. Psalm 34:9 tells us, "For those who fear him, God, lack nothing." Now, the first verse says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Despite the fact that many young children apparently think this means we don't want the Lord as our shepherd, this is a reflection that we shall lack for nothing. Philippians 4:19 tells us, "And he will supply all your needs according to his riches and glory through Messiah Yeshua." And we can read in Deuteronomy 2:7, "For the Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hands. He knows you're going through the great wilderness these 40 years. Your God has been with you. You have lacked nothing." The Lord provides, whether we recognize it or not. And sometimes it may not be what we thought we needed, but it is what he desires for us because he knows best. A lack of want reflects a condition in which you are where you're supposed to be, and he provides the needs of the moment. Not tomorrow, not next year, but today. And we are to be satisfied with this. The Lord makes me lie down in green pastures. Sheep, like cattle and goats, are what are called ruminants. That means they have a several compartmented stomach, and they chew up the grass, they digest it, they regurgitate it, they chew it again and again. This is called chewing the cud. This is how they do digest their food so completely, which makes them an efficient producer to convert grass to meat. If you know anything about ruminants, and particularly sheep, you recognize that if they're stressed, if they're afraid, if there are predators present, if they don't trust their shepherd, if there are bugs or flies or parasites, if it's windy, if it's cold, if it's hot, if there's anything less than ideal conditions, they stir about. Now, in Israel, green pastures aren't everywhere you look. It's a dry and barren land, and so a shepherd needs to know where to find green pastures. The Lord knows where the green pastures are. He knows the place that satisfies our needs. And he will lead us there, But we need to follow him. We need to trust in him. The other thing about ruminants, and particularly sheep, is until they feel safe, secure, they're not bothered by anything, and they're full and satisfied, they've eaten their fill, only then will they lie down. So the fact that they're lying down says that God has not only provided all we need, but we know we're safe. We can trust in him. He will protect us. He leads me beside still waters. This isn't talking about a brook or a river or a stream that can dry up or that can rush and be unsafe. Still waters indicate a place of security, an oasis, a place that's populated and therefore predators are not there. He leads you beside still waters because he knows you will recognize it as a safe haven. God provides safe havens for us throughout our lives, whether we're talking Goshen in the time of the Exodus or in this day. He provides safe havens if we recognize it, if we trust in him. The next blessing we see is security. I'm going to read from John 10, 1 through 18, if you would allow me. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him, the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. When he has brought out all of his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he said to them. So Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All who come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I come that they might have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. He flees because a hired hand cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. We go back to the 23rd Psalm. He leads me beside still waters and he restores my soul. It is the desire of the Lord to restore our soul. And I understand the meaning of the word that's used for restore in Hebrew means not to make it as it was originally, but to surpass that. He wants to make us better than we could imagine, because he restores us when we trust in him, when we rest in him, when we follow his voice. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Not for our goodness, but so that his name will be glorified. People will recognize the benefits of being God's sheep and he will get the glory. These are paths of his choosing, not ours. The sheep follow him because they know his voice. If we had a flock of sheep out in the parking lot, one of you could go out there and the sheep would run. I might be able to go out there and walk among them, but they'd mill about, they'd be uneasy. They'd recognize that I know what I'm doing and I'm familiar with sheep, but I'm still not their shepherd. But if the shepherd went out, they would hear his voice and they would listen and follow him. I am the good shepherd. My sheep hear my voice. Are we listening? Do we hear his voice? Do we obey him? Do we follow when he calls? Or do we go in our own way? The place of security is a place of lack of fear. I am the door. The good shepherd lays his life down for the sheep. When you live in a place like Wyoming or Spain or France, there's a lot of grass. There's trees. There's abundance. And so at night, you put the sheep in a fold, which is a pen, so that they don't wander off and so that predators don't get them. And in places like this, you make a fence out of wood and you put a gate on it. When you live, however, in a place like Israel or a place like Scotland, places that have a lot of sheep, there isn't wood available. And so the shepherd would build a sheepfold out of rocks. You'd make a wall big enough to hold the entire flock, but not much bigger. And you'd make it about this high. And this had two effects. It would keep the sheep in because they're not going to jump that wall. And it would keep predators out. So the sheep were safe for the night. You'd leave a space about 5 or 6 feet long. And that was the gate. The sheep come in through the gate and out through the gate at the master's voice. They follow the shepherd for they know his voice. When Jesus says, I am the door, that's understood by his listeners that it's a literal thing. Because the reason the door is there is after the sheep are put in there, the shepherd sleeps in the opening. The sheep won't go across him so that he functionally keeps them in. But also, any predators that come upon him have to go through him to get the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for the sheep. Everyone that heard these words would understand it. It's not only figurative, but it's also literal. The shepherd laid down his life for those sheep. That's the heart of the Father. He will do anything to keep us safe. In addition to lack of fear, there's also comfort. Because we read, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. When you're herding sheep in an area like Israel, many times the paths to the green pastures are not known to just everybody. The shepherd has to be familiar with the area. He has to know the best path to take, the safest route, the most direct path, and the place where it's safe from predators. And oftentimes, this is through narrow canyons with steep walls. These paths would be dark, and a sheep's natural instinct is not to go anywhere near it. But because they trust the voice of their shepherd, because he's proven in the past he is trustworthy, and he will keep them safe, sheep will follow in this dark, narrow path because they trust he will protect them from all harm. Do we trust when God calls us to go in darkness, in narrow paths, in places where we're uncertain? Do we hear his voice and follow? Or do we listen to the voice of the evil one who says, that's not safe, don't go, don't listen? Another benefit of our good shepherd is good standing. Deuteronomy 6:18a says, and you shall do what is right and good in the sight of the Lord, that it may go well with you. If we do what God asks, If we listen to his voice, if we obey, it will go well with us. I will fear no evil, for you are with me, for your rod and your staff, they comfort me. The word for rod and the word for staff in Hebrew are two different words, but they can mean similar things. They serve two different functions. A rod is a instrument of discipline. Use a rod on an errant child. And if you have a rod with you when you're herding sheep, you use the rod to chase away predators. Or if worse comes to worse, if you have two rams fighting, you might break up the fight. You don't hit the sheep with a rod because you will lose all faith. They'll never trust you again. They have long memories. The staff has a crook on the end, like a cane does. And this is used to guide the sheep. It's never used to hurt them. If you have a lamb that strays, you can reach them around the neck and restrain them. With an adult sheep, you reach in front of their hind leg at the joint where it meets the body, and you stop them. And they're reassured by this because they're not frightened. They know you don't mean them any harm. You might tap them gently on the shoulder to direct their path, but you never hit them, you never hurt them. And so they're comforted because they know this is for their own good. When God corrects us, do we recognize that it's for our own good? Or do we want to fight? Do we recognize that this is his staff? Or do we fight him and think it's the rod and we're trying to run away? We need to recognize the Lord knows what he's doing if we just look and we see his hand. Next we read that you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. When you realize that in the ancient Middle East, and to a large degree today, honor and shame are a very big thing. It's a culture of honor and shame. To lose honor is to be disgraced forever. This is why it was such an important thing that God told his children, you are to honor your father and mother. Because they are a symbol of his parenthood. When you dishonor your parents, you dishonor God. Losing face is a very big deal. Because of this culture of honor and shame, it is customary that if someone comes to your house, whether or not you know them, you and all them welcome to enter in. You invite them to stay with you. You don't put an end date on it. You don't say you can stay for a couple days. You're welcome, and they're welcome to stay with you for an indeterminate period of time. If you are a righteous man, you are a good host. You will offer them food and drink. You will treat them well because it's a reflection of who you are and a reflection thereof of the community. If you do not treat someone honorably, the whole community is disgraced. So when God says he will give us a feast in front of our enemies, he is saying that I will take you in. You are welcome in my presence, and I will offer you good things. The other implication is when you are a guest, you are protected. You have the protection of the house, and they will not allow your enemies to do you harm. So he's offering us a table, a meal, a membership in the community where we are safe from our enemies and we don't have to worry because he will protect us. You anoint my head with oil. Anointing is a sign of honor. You are an honored guest. David was anointed as king of Israel. They anointed prophets, they anointed kings, they anointed priests. And Jesus tells us we are the priesthood of believers. He anoints our head with oil. He gives us a place of honor in his house. my cup overflows. He isn't saying I'll fill it. It overflows. It's not adequacy. This is abundance. He is giving you more than you can imagine. You have no idea the gifts God has in store for you. He gives out of his abundance because he loves us. Rather than adequacy, we see generosity and love. The Father gives us good things because he loves us. We are his sheep. If we hear his voice, we recognize his voice, we follow him. He has good plans for us. He is the good shepherd. Another one of the benefits is restoration. Malachi 4:2 says, "For you who fear my name, the Son of Righteousness shall rise with healing in its wings. You shall go out leaping like calves from the stall." Most of you probably aren't familiar with that picture. Those of us who have had livestock recognize that when a calf is in a stall, it's unnatural. They're restrained. It's like you trying to put your 2-year-old in a closet for a week. You open the door and they run and they jump and they stick their tail in the air and they just go crazy and wild and they'll fall over and jump up. You know, it's fun to watch. And that's the picture God has. You will go leaping like calves from the stall. You'll recognize your freedom. Restoration. Not restored to what you were, but a better position. We are told that surely goodness and mercy will follow us all the days of our life. Psalm 37, verses 23 to 25 tell me, "The steps of a man are established by the Lord when he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be cast headlong, for the Lord upholds his hand. I have been young and now I'm old, yet I have not yet seen the righteous forsaken, or his children begging for bread. He is ever lending generously, and his children become a blessing." The Lord gives good things to his children. He doesn't promise we'll get the things we want, but he does promise we'll get the things we need. Sometimes we have the mistaken perception that that means we'll have a new car or a new house or a good job and a lot of money. God doesn't promise those things. He promises he'll provide one day at a time as we require. If we think about it, most of us probably have eaten in the last day. Most of us are clothed and have shelter. Those are the needs of our life. Anything beyond that is want. Like any father, God delights in giving us the desires of our heart. And often he'll give us things we want, not that we need. Sometimes he'll give us things we ask for that we really shouldn't ask for, so that we might learn. If we listen to his voice, we follow him and we recognize what he is telling us. We recognize when our own desires overtake what God desires for us. When we don't listen to his voice, we listen to the voice inside of us or the voice of the enemy, and we go astray. When we're willing to turn back, when we feel that crook around our neck, do we stop and go, "Oh, I know him, I can trust him, he has my best interest at heart"? Or do we kick and scream and fight against it? Are we willing to listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd? Remember, he lays down his life for the sheep. And what is asked in return? That we listen to his voice. That we recognize His wisdom is greater than ours. His knowledge is sufficient. Rather than doing things our way, desiring the things of the world, or postponing that which we hear. I'll do that later. First I need to do this. Or are we willing to say, yes, Lord, I don't understand it, but I'm willing to do this anyway. Because you have proved that I can trust you. I see your hand in my life. I see where you have said before, do this, and it turned out well. And I recognize when you corrected me and I ignored you and it didn't go quite so well. I hear your voice. I recognize your voice. And I trust you because I know you are trustworthy. We are told that we will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That's an amazing promise. Who else can promise us forever? All right, who else can promise us forever and provide it? Yeah. Yeah, most people will promise it, but that doesn't mean it'll come to pass. Revelation 21, 3 and 4 says, and God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Nor shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. When we live in the house of the Lord forever, we have nothing to fear. We will want for nothing. His provision is perfect. Another implication is that when you live in the house of the Lord forever, we can practice that now by living every moment in Him. Let Him be your ever-present guide. Let Him direct your path. Let Him correct your ways when you stray. Listen for His voice. My sheep know my voice. You've heard Him before. You know He can be trusted. He's proven that. Any doubts you have been long gone. Why then do we not listen? This isn't something we can do overnight. I know I can't. But day by day, if we try to listen to His voice and be sensitive, knowing whose voice we hear, for the sheep know my voice. I am the good shepherd. If we recognize His voice and we demonstrate a willingness to follow Him, we're not going to do it perfectly. We're going to get lost a lot. But He'll be there to bring us back. He'll be there to direct our paths. He'll be there to lift us up when we fall and to protect us when we go into danger. If we try day by day to grow in our ability to listen, to grow in our willingness to follow, to trust in Him above all things, as we dwell with Him day by day, moment by moment, we will see and recognize His hand of blessing on our life. We'll see Him providing abundantly. We'll see Him providing security. We will see and recognize the good standing in our life we gain. We'll see that we are restored. He is the good shepherd, and He lays down His life for the sheep. May we listen to His voice and recognize His hand on our lives. May we be ever watchful that we don't follow false shepherds. For there are those like me that know their way among the sheep. And the sheep will recognize that they know, even though they don't recognize the voice. Let's be careful that we recognize the voice rather than take comfort in familiarity and think, well, this is close enough. there is only one good shepherd. And the shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Let us recognize his voice and follow him.